You're listening to Chops Talks, a series of conversations with artists appearing at the 2022 TD Winnipeg International Jazz Festival. I'm Michael Ells, host of Thank God It's Free Range, and on this episode, I'm joined by Tanika Charles, soul singer from Toronto who has released three records on Italian label Record Kicks. Her latest is Papillon de Nuit. Tanika Charles plays the TD Winnipeg International Jazz Festival on Friday, June 17th at the King's Head Pub at 8:30 p.m. Whenever we talk a catastrophe, can we just step back for a minute? You're moving too fast, my heart's not in it. You're stressing me out and maybe I'm frustrated, mistreated, heartbroken, defeated. I'm no angel, I'm human, wondering how do I get you off my mind? How do I get this off my mind? How do I get back my own time? Even without you, right? Well, her latest album is called Papillon de Nuit. Tanika Charles is coming to the Winnipeg Jazz Festival, and she joins us on the line. Welcome to the show, Tanika.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you on, and happy to talk about this new record.
Now, great.
This is the third record, and I know in talking to artists, you know, you have your whole lifetime to make your first record, then you have about 2 years to make the sophomore record. What's the, like, mindset or process for a third record, like, after you kind of get over that hump of the making that second record?
Well, the process of making a third, okay, so it's kind of difficult because this was created during a very difficult time.
Mm. The past 2 years, perhaps?
Exactly. And it was actually quite difficult to want to move forward with recording a whole new project because I just, you know, mentally wasn't in the best place. Mm-hmm. There was no motivation. There was no inspiration. So, I thought that maybe my last album, The Gumption, would have been it, but I managed to, you know, connect with some excellent producers and a really great group of friends that write, and, you know, the joy, I guess, of creating a project came back with great difficulty, but we managed to get it done. So I guess the process is just kind of getting into a mindset and, I don't know, like an energy to want to do something, because it was such a dark period.
Right. Now, so, was that mindset like a whole new mindset, or was it kind of returning to a mindset you'd been in for the prior two records?
It was definitely, I know I keep kind of, not keep mentioning, but I have to, you know, address that it was 2 years of stagnant energy. It was 2 years of, you know, witnessing just everything kind of falling apart. And then, you know, I wanted to be happy, and I'm happiest when I'm writing and creating. So once that kind of, I'm going to use the word energy so much, but
sure.
Once that kind of pattern, once that kind of vibe started getting back into like my bones, it was go. It was go time.
So how did you recover that vibe when you say, you know, got it back in your veins? Like, what was it, connecting with these collaborators, or was there something kind of like internally that happened, or just a
100,
combo?
Yeah, it was at all of that. I wanted to actually do whatever the heck I wanted to do for this next album. I'm with an Italian label at the moment, and it's a very niche label. And while I love horns and I love the big band, I'm totally into that sound. I just wanted to try something a little bit different. And I was introduced to some local musicians, and they had a sound that really kind of sparked some life. And there was content that I could write to. So what I wanted to do was, you know, there were a lot of things that were addressed that were kind of sad, but I wanted to put it over, you know, beautiful music, I guess you can say.
Right.
So when connecting with these guys, and then I normally write with Robert Bolton. I've been writing with him since Soul Run. And I've recently connected with a new artist. His name is Tafari Anthony. These, collaborating with them, just really kind of jolted something in me, on top of meeting these amazing producers. So it just felt good to want to be in the studio again.
Yeah.
Guess that's the best way. I feel like I'm just babbling like
Don't
crazy.
Sweat it. I read an interview you did with Albumism where you worry about how you do in interviews, but I want to treat this more of a conversation than an interview. So I hope you feel comfortable just kind of veering and kind of, if you want to take a conversational cul-de-sac, I'm ready to drive down that road with you.
Thank you.
Of course. Now, you mentioned Record Kicks. I mean, obviously that, you know, there's like kind of a throwback soul vibe to that label, and wanting to kind of move away from the horns. I know you're a big music listener. Was that something kind of coming out of who you listen to and who you're responding to, or was that like an internal push to like veer away from that in kind of recognition of where you were at that time?
So it's interesting because I didn't even want, but this genre was something that was kind of thrown at me in a weird kind of way. Not thrown at me, like, of course I've listened to Charles and Sharon Jones, and yes, I understand that feeling. I understand that sound. I think it's amazing. Normally, I listen to Radiohead. I listen to like Bob James. I listen to everything that I don't sing. You know, I'm not saying that the throwback isn't soul. There was just, I think I wanted to lean more into moodier kind of R&B. I don't think that's on this album at all.
No.
I think maybe there's a couple of songs on there, because I still wanted to, you know, let make songs that people were familiar with Tanika Charles. So while I was kind of wanting to veer away from it just a little bit, I thought, I'm just going to sing and write to everything that I love. And it might sound like a mishmash on the album, but at that point, after 2 years of just like doing nothing, I didn't care. And somehow it all made sense. And yet there's a bunch of songs on there that have horns. Actually, most of them do. I wanted to have an album that was rich in vocals, call and response. I just really wanted to do whatever I wanted to do.
you brought in outside collaborators, like in terms of on the actual tracks too, right? Like this is, if I'm not mistaken, like DJSB and Kari McClellan's are the first kind of like featuring credits.
Yes.
Was that a just byproduct of wanting to work with people after being shut in for a while, or?
No, absolutely not. That was like, why don't you try working with other people or featuring other people? Because it's always just been, you know, writing a bunch of songs and kind of putting it out there. But Kari, I've worked with for a while. Like he has a play called Freedom Singer, and we just work incredibly well together. I was a recipient of the NAC kind of like I can't remember the term.
Was it like an artist in residence thing?
Exactly that. Yeah. Thank you. And I'd asked Kari to come along with me because, you know, when we're on tour together, we'll just sit in the back room and create music, just start writing and have a really great time. So I felt comfortable bringing him along with me. And we wrote 5 songs in a week. So out of one of those songs, I was like, you know what, I'm going to put this on the album because it's a lot of fun. And Deja, I've been following for quite some time. They are just so prolific, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
Hilarious, just good vibes. And when I sent a message to them, the response, I wasn't expecting to even get a reply. It was, yes, let's do this together. And it just turned out perfectly. I'd sent the song, they listened and sent it back, and it all made sense. Now don't get me wrong, I have reached out to a few people, but you know, I think I was really shooting for the stars. And I thought, let me just shoot my shot, and if someone gets back to me, that would be great. And if not, I tried. But I'm very pleased with working with Deja, SB, and Kari, and I would do it again.
So Kari, you obviously had a relationship built up with past experience and had probably a sense of kind of what you'd get out of him. With Deja, like, did you give them carte blanche in terms of like, here's the song, figure out what you want to do on it, or did you give any direction?
Yeah, basically, that's it. You have full control over what you want to write about. And the material was just so on point. It couldn't have been any better. It was great. And I had a feeling that Deja would know what to write. There was no pressure. There was no stress. There wasn't even a timeline. It was sent. They sent it back within days, and it just worked out perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer that, you know. There are, you know, I like to work with musicians that, sure, if you're classically trained, that's amazing, but I prefer just like natural, you know, feeling and soul and just kind of, this is who you are. This is what you do. I don't like to put a lot of pressure on people.
Is that because there's kind of like an innate like getting it versus like working it out?
Yeah. Are you asking?
Yeah, I'm asking, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because you said you prefer to work, you know, with people maybe who aren't necessarily like classically trained or something. Because a lot of times it's like more of an intellectual exercise or like a math problem.
Right.
Versus, you know, it's just like a resonance.
Right. So I have there's a guy that I play with. His name is, I mean, my whole band is like this, but his name is Ben Foran, and Ben taught himself at a young age to play guitar. And the way he plays this guitar and the chords that he comes up with and the way he makes it sing, I'm not saying he wouldn't learn that if he went to school for it, but I just feel like there's a different, like it's in him, and it just feels more like there's more passion to it. Mind you, I could be putting my foot in my mouth here, but I just feel like when it's in you, like you've taught yourself, you knew that this is what you wanted to do in life, and you worked at it, and you took the time. I don't know. It just feels like there's more love in it. I could be wrong.
No, it's interesting because I was just thinking when you're talking about, you know, sort of self-taught guitarists, Yasmin Williams, I don't know if you're familiar with them. But she's out of like the Eastern States. She taught herself after playing Guitar Hero, and like her style is kind of based on like holding the guitar flat across her lap like a Guitar Hero player would. And what's funny in terms of just thinking about this is I remember during Black History Month, we shared recommendations of albums of Black joy, and your album, it was about to come out. So we shared that, but I also shared the Yasmin Williams record, and just,
wow,
just made me think of that.
First of all, thank you. And second of all, that's what I'm talking about. Just, that's fascinating. That's how you taught yourself how to play guitar. And is Yasmin amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like a passion. It's just inside your body and you just want to learn. And then you can just take it to, you know, these magical places. It's, I don't know how to put it into words. I just think it's just spectacular.
Well, in terms of having difficulty putting things into words, I am going to ask you about kind of like writing a song of, or writing an album full of Black joy during a period in which maybe was much more difficult to find joy.
Mm-hmm. You're not wrong. There were a couple of songs that we didn't use where it was, you know, we were talking about being in a pandemic and just being in touch with others. And I didn't want to listen to that album or this album years down the road and then be reminded of that time. There was so much turmoil happening. And while there was a lot that I could have written about, it was just too painful. So I normally fall back onto writing about just interactions and relationships with others. I just find it's easier to write to, and everybody, or I'm hoping that most people can relate to, you know, a lot of the content that I've written. But there were quite a few songs that were written in its entirety, but then I just thought, no, I don't know if I'm ready to release that right now. Maybe a little bit later down the line, if I, you know, happen to create another album. I don't know. Because, you know, when you write, it takes you back to a moment. And I honestly have to say, like, I didn't love it. I didn't love that time. I didn't enjoy being, like, depressed.
Right. And then performing it, I have to imagine you maybe tap back into those feelings and don't necessarily want to go back there for that reason either.
Exactly that. You know, some people write and then it's therapeutic for them. I cry for everything and easily. So, you know, and that takes me time to recover from that. So I get it. Like, you know, people want to kind of experience what you went through, or they at least want to know. And I just don't think I have the capacity to do that right now. And I don't think I would have it for a while. I can't even tell you how difficult that period was. And I feel like I'm just seeing the forest through the trees, you know?
Right. Yeah. You mentioned Bob James earlier. And I read an interview that you did where you said your dad would come home and put on records and sit you down and say, like, do you hear what the horns are doing? Do you see what key this is in? And Bob James was one of the ones he would play. Mm-hmm. And then subsequent to that, your dad is kind of your sounding board and was your sounding board for this record and let you know kind of when a song was hitting?
Absolutely. That man is like my biggest champion as well as like my greatest love. He can hear when notes are flat and notes are wrong. And, you know, why don't you try playing something, playing the guitar this way or add a little more of that. He was just so integral in this process. And I really don't think I could have done it without him. Just even growing up listening to music, I had no idea that singing was something that I was going to have as a career. Not once. But I am so grateful to my father for, you know, kind of implementing music into the home daily or when he was home from work, because he loves music so much. He, to this day, will sit on a couch, and now he drinks lemon water, not so much like a rum and coke like he used to back in the day, but he would sit down and just for hours listen to jazz. And I go home often. I go to Edmonton quite a bit. And I really enjoy sitting with him, even to this day, because it's just memories of when I was a child. So And he's still just as excited about music as he was so many years ago. Yeah, my dad's like the greatest man to me.
And it sounded like he was at least, you know, he, not necessarily your fiercest critic, but at least like willing to provide you, you know, critical feedback to say, no, this isn't, the song's not right yet.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
I have to imagine having someone who you know is in your corner, but is also willing to like tell you what it is. That's maybe one of the like most critical people to have in your life.
You know, when Soul Run first came out, I sent it to my dad and he's like, I like one song
harsh.
Out of all of those songs. He's like, yeah, I'm not too crazy about these ones. This is my favorite song. And it's the last song on the album. And then when The Gumption came out, you know, he was like, yeah, it's okay. When I finished the first song on Papillon de Nuit and I sent it to him, I think it was A Million Ways. And the first thing he said to me was, this song is beautiful. This is it. There's nothing else that needs to be done. And so, of course, I was like, yes, he's going to like all the other songs. I'm on a roll. Like, I was so proud because he absolutely loved the song right from the beginning. So then I sent him another song and it was Frustrated. And this song was, you know, a thorn in my side because I kept hearing things that I didn't know how to explain to the producers or my engineer that I needed to hear, but I don't read music and I don't speak the language. I kind of just sing things out and hope that everybody understands what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And I would send this song to my dad. I think I must have sent it to different versions of it like 6 times. And at the 6th pass, he's like, okay, the song is ready to go. And I loved doing that with him because I'm not with him all the time. My dad's in his 70s, still like, you know, bright and moving around. He's totally active. But the experience of sharing this creation, this album with him, like it's one of my, or going to be one of my best memories. You know, I really, truly love this album.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of it, but I'm proud of it because my dad is proud of it and proud of me for, like, I guess, advancing in a way. He just said, the material is great. The music is spectacular. I'm very proud of you. So, of course, naturally, I'm proud. And that's really difficult to say because I'm just such a harsh critic of myself.
So this is like the record he heard in you and wanted to eventually hear, like the whole of, right? Like you said like one song in the first record and like, oh yeah, 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 I can see some progress on The Gumption, but this is the U.S.D. you.
This is it. Yeah. You know? Oh man. Yeah. I'm just thinking of like what I, you know, writing this album and I was listening to a lot of Yeba. I listen to Yeba so much because she sings her pain so beautifully.
Mm.
And I guess the issues that I find that I have are, you know, singing in the studio is not nearly as exciting as singing to a crowd and having to pull emotions into a microphone looking at a wall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really the best studio singer. It takes a lot for me to feel something in the studio. And there was a lot of material that, you know, like the people that I'd worked with, certain people that I've worked with, some of the music is about them, you know? So being in the same room as the person that I'm singing about, that's difficult as well. It was definitely a journey. It's definitely a journey, that album.
For sure. Well, the upside of you coming to Jazz Fest means you'll be singing in front of a crowd, which I think it sounds like you much prefer in terms of drawing energy and vibing.
Yes, and I can't wait. I love Winnipeg. Oh, my gosh.
Awesome. Yeah. Before I let you go, Tanika, I want to get you to pick a track off of Papillon de Nuit that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote about the song, I'd love to hear that.
Sure. I feel like my favorite song, I think, is A Million Ways. And it's basically like an ode to love and loving, and it's a ballad of just describing how you feel about someone or God or yourself or whomever. It's just a beautiful ballad of love.
All right. Well, we'll give that one a listen. Tanika, thanks very much for taking some time, and looking forward to having you here in Winnipeg.
Can't wait. And thank you for having me.
I'm Michael Elves, and you've been listening to Chops Talks, a series of conversations with artists playing the 2022 TD Winnipeg International Jazz Festival. For tickets and complete lineup information, visit jazzwinnipeg.com.